Boulder's algorithm was very important before floating point arithmetic logic units became mainstream. When floating point arithmetic was expensive and not common in everyday microprocessors, then this sort of algorithm was very important. Cost of electronics has obviously come down and down and down, and now every cell phone has amazing processing power inside it. The ability to do floating point computation at low energy is very much better than it was 30 years ago. But if we look up at the ceiling here, we see a little white thing in the middle there, another one at the back, a smoke sensor. These all today contain radio links and microprocessors and that sort of thing. They have computers in them. And the grade of computer which is used in such very low-cost electronic component doesn't have floating point support in hardware. And so if that smoke sensor needed to do some trigonometry to work out, for instance, who in the audience was smoking by triangulation or something like that, then it would be appropriate for it to use the Cordic approach, perhaps to do the sine and cosine. So although this has moved out of mainstream numerical analysis, very applicable technique in the right situation. And I gave you the guts of the algorithm at the end of last lecture. It's very simple. All we do is factorise the angle we wish to rotate into a sum of sub-angles, and we carefully choose that sum such that they can each in turn, their tangent is very, very simple when expressed in binary fixed point, that's what's normally used, such that the coefficients all have just one bit set. And then when we do all the concatenation of matrix rotations, we get the sine and cosine of the angle that we wanted to start with. Here is the code in ML. We have a pre-computed table of numbers whose tan has one bit in it, and we iterate through that table. So in this ML fragment, which you can find online, the table is stored in an ML vector, initialized with the angles whose tangents are half, a quarter, an eighth, and so on. And we subscript the vector with this operation in a rather ugly ML matrix syntax. And we iterate through, multiplying the current sine and cosine value with the next entry in the table. It's in Java, I think it's slightly clearer, slightly less concise as always, but slightly clearer, that what we have to do is we have to look at the next value in the table and subtract it off or add it on. So here the table is called C-tab, the current angle is theta, and if our current angle, which will always start off, well, it won't actually, it could start off positive or negative. We would assume perhaps that it starts off positive, and so this condition will hold, and we'll subtract the angle from the table, the next angle from the table, from the current value of theta. That may then go negative, so on the next iteration through, the other clause of this if will hold, and we'll add on the next value of the table. It's just a binary chop, adding or subtracting values from the table for some fixed number of iterations, such as 32. And in each iteration, we need to do the matrix multiply, which is here written out. Here's the new x and here's the new y. It's the old x and y plus or minus the value of x and y right shifted by k. So this is in the matrix form. We are multiplying by a 1 here and here always, or in that form, here and here. And here and here we're multiplying by numbers which have one bit set. And so all we need to do is right shift by the number 1 by the bit position of the bit that's set. And we've carefully chosen our alpha i's such that it's the next bit along each time. The table is initialized with the angles whose tangents are half, a quarter, an eighth, and so on, which is why we can just do a simple right shift here by the next value of k each time, and that is the matrix multiply, either in clockwise or anti-clockwise. And when we've got to the end, the values in x and y are the sine and cosine of the answer, except for this common factor, which needs to be multiplied through at the end, or if we're cunning, we just initialize x and y to the reciprocal of that at the outset. Not the reciprocal, it's a common factor, so we can multiply at the beginning or the end. And here we're multiplying at the beginning. And this is not the number 1, as you can see. It's a much larger number. It's actually the number that we'd need to multiply at the end, which is going to be a small fraction, times 10 to the 9. And the answer at the end is going to be, because this is all integer arithmetic, no floating point going on here, the answer is going to be the numerator over a denominator of what we started by multiplying through 10 to the 9. And so in the Java implementation, when we print out the answer, we also just divide by 10 to the 9 to make it a nice human-readable form. The Java version is almost exactly the same, except that we've made the C version even neater than this by getting rid of the if-then-else, because the only difference between these is the plussing and minusing, and the exchange of the minus and plus here. And having an if statement is actually an overhead which can be avoided if we're cunning programmers, as this guy at Glasgow, who was tilde JHW, whoever he is, I don't know him, but what he's done here is he's got rid of the if statement and he is using the embedded if inside this comparison here. So d is either initialized to 0 or minus 1. If d is 0, then exclusive oring by it, which is what that up arrow does, has no effect. Subtracting it also has no effect, and that is one of the two clauses of the if statement. Same here, no difference. If d is minus 1, then exclusive oring with minus 1 flips all the bits, and then subtracting minus 1 adds on 1. And for those who remember how to do 2's complement, flipping all the bits and adding on 1 is the way we get negation. So that's just a way of making this minus into a plus and that plus into a minus conditionally. So it's a cunning piece of code as implemented there. Very, very efficient. Quite a few tricks have gone into putting it together. So that one is printing out the integer answers, x and y, and then it's printing slash 10 to the 9, whereas the Java one that's checked in is implemented, it's casting it to a double at the end, which is asking the computer to convert the integer x to a floating point number. We wouldn't really want to do that in a real implementation because we're talking about very constrained hardware devices where casting complexity, converting from integer to floating point, would be undesirably expensive and also not sensible because there is no floating point on such an embedded platform.